Hey everyone, this is Josh from Solopreneur Grind, and I am here with Jonathan Pritchard. Jonathan, really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Hey man, thanks for having me.
Awesome. So Jonathan, really excited for this episode. Lots of cool stuff going on in your life and really excited to hear about it. But for those who may not have heard about you, could you give us a little bit about you, kind of who you are, what you're working on, and then I'd love to get into how you got into it as well.
You got it. The kind of top level is I'm a business consultant and speaker specializing on the psychology of influence as it applies to presentations, negotiations, sales processes, that kind of fun stuff. And I found my way there by first being a world traveling mentalist for about a decade. Did basically a mind reading show, which is kind of like a magic show that graduated to mind reading tricks. So while the effects are showmanship, moxie, and applied psychology, the principles that make them work are universally applicable to life and business. So I found my way there by just always being fascinated by why people think and do what they do. So yeah, it's been a long winding path to get here, and it's been a lot of fun.
Right. And that's really what stuck out to me when I was going through kind of your bio and your history is a lot of coaches and, you know, business guys, especially when they're coaching and consulting, you look at their history and it's like, oh, I worked at corporate company X and then corporate company Y, and now I'm here. And your path seems so unique and interesting. So I'm really excited to get into it. How do you get to that first part? So like, did you finish undergrad or finish high school, and you know, did you fall into it? I'm really curious to know how you got even to that very first step in your career.
Yeah, for the educational part of things, my degree is in painting. Right. So my educational background is in fine art and visual communication. So right. I'm a visual thinker and think almost entirely in pictures, and art and design has been a huge part of my life, both personally and professionally. So it's kind of a marriage of design thinking with psychology of motivation and human thought, right? And that is so far out there. How in the world do you get there? Well, my other interest got started when I was a kid. I got a beginner's magic book, and in every beginner's magic book, there are coin tricks. There's the card tricks section. There's the, here are big stage illusions you can make at home out of cardboard and duct tape. And there's always a mind reading section.
Right.
So, you know, you just dive in, you try them all, and finding somebody's card is fun, but it's kind of a puzzle. Hey, how did you find that card? That was neat. But mind reading, like, how in the world did you know that about me? Mm-hmm. Right? And that is a really powerful thing to know, that people are most interested in themselves. So if what you do features them, you are going to be very interesting to that person.
Right. Yeah.
So that was really cool. I was like, all right, the tricks are neat, but the mind reading stuff is just fascinating to me. So in junior high, when I was 13, I learned how to juggle fire, eat fire, hammer nails up my nose. So I've got kind of circus carny blood. Like that's deep in there. But the mind reading was always my true love. And in college, I got fascinated not only in knowing how these tricks worked, right? Like the techniques of this magic trick and then this one and that trick. More of a, why are magic tricks even possible in the first place? Right? Because magic effects do not exist in the physical world. The things you do to create them do, but the effect of them is not physical. So it only exists in the spectator's mind. The place where my work exists is only in the minds of the audience, which is such an abstract, bizarre thing to think about that I get paid to create experience for people, right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
So once you understand how people fundamentally interact and orient themselves to reality, then you can kind of hijack that process to create experiences that are impossible in the physical world.
Right. Could you give us a really basic example of one of those in play, or does this fall under the magician never reveals his tricks?
It's yes.
Yeah,
Right.
I
My
tried. I tried.
now here, before we even dig into that, we have to cover these two things. First is the five stages of grief for your sense of amazement and wonder. Right? First,
Okay.
there's denial. No, it can't be like that. Then there's bargaining. It has to be something cooler than that. Then there's depression. This is stupid. Then there's anger. I bet you think I'm an idiot because this worked. And then finally acceptance. All right, that's kind of cool.
Right.
Right? So there's that. And the second thing is the curse of knowledge. Now, if I were to do this with you in person, you would be flummoxed. You'd just be like, now, how in the world did you know that? But as I'm talking through it, you go, that is so stupid. No human being would ever be fooled by that.
Right.
It's because you have the curse of knowledge of how it works. So now you live in a universe where that's possible. And it's very difficult to take yourself out of that experiential knowledge and drop yourself into a universe of possibility where you didn't know that, and then imagine the experience of the amazement.
Right. I
Right?
mean, yeah.
So as we're talking through this and you're going, well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, just trust me that I've done this thousands of times and it works every time. All
No,
right?
I'm fascinated by it, and I have no doubt. I'm curious, Jonathan. So you develop this kind of interest early on, and then you go a little bit down the arts road for your undergraduate degree. What happens after the degree, or were you kind of working it on the side while you were studying and to kind of help push it along?
Yeah, while I was getting my degree, I was doing walk around mind reading at fancy restaurants
Wow.
in my college town. Right? So it's always been, it's just what I've always done with my life. My
And
first paid gig.
what does that entail? Sorry to cut you off. I'm
Yeah, no
so
worries.
curious of what that would like, what is that?
Well, let's see. So the restaurant would book me because I'm their insurance policy. Say, for example, a server forgets to put in your order and it's a $70 dinner. And now you, the customer, are upset that it's taking 45 minutes, right? Since the time you ordered, it's now been 35 minutes and you still don't have your food. And you're like, this is ridiculous. It's supposed to be 12-minute turnaround, right?
Right.
So then they have to comp that $70 and
Right.
give you, coupons to come back, all that jazz. So that's kind of an expensive mistake. So I'm the insurance policy because the server realizes, oh my God, I didn't put in their order and it's going to take even longer. So I'm on call, I'm
Right.
there. So then they come over and be like, oh my God, Jonathan, would you go to table 12? And it'll be out in like 10 minutes or so, but could you distract them? Yeah, sure.
Right.
So I walk over and go, hey guys, how's the evening going? My job is to make sure you guys are having fun. And they're like, yeah, this is great, great time, right? So then I just go into it and I'm reading their mind, bending the silverware, just all sorts of fun stuff. And then, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. Your food's here. I have to stop.
Right.
Off to the next table. Right?
Right.
Or while people are waiting to be sat and they're just sitting there on their phones, I get everybody talking and having fun, and now there's just this kind of sense of camaraderie and community, and then they go, man, that was a lot of fun. I love this place. So
Right.
that experience transfers to the environment and the context, which is the restaurant. So they love me. I am the restaurant, therefore they love the restaurant.
Right, that association. But how did you even get to that level of skill in terms of mind reading by that point in your life?
It's literally what I've spent my life doing, because I got interested doing these magic tricks when I was 5 years old.
Right.
It started when I was five and hasn't ever stopped.
Right.
So it's like by the time I'm 18, I have 13 years worth of experience doing this stuff.
Right. That's incredible. I wish I would have happened into one of those restaurants to see it. And so you graduate, and what's the next step after then?
I get a job at Universal Studios demonstrating magic at a magic shop that was inside the park.
Wow.
So the magic shop was a third-party vendor. So the dude that owns the magic shop was renting that space and had the stamp of approval from Universal Studios to be there selling magic tricks. Mm-hmm. But I was on the opening crew. Like I helped paint the walls and put the product on the shelf, right?
Right.
So that was my first job, was sales to international clientele,
mm-hmm.
who weren't there to buy magic.
Right.
Right. They're there for a vacation and thrill rides and roller coasters. And this was well before Harry Potter World was a thing. Mm-hmm. Right. So I learned a lot about sales from that job, because we were just a 4 or 5 person team, and we consistently outsold all of the other third party vendors, including the t-shirts, the keychains, the henna tattoos, the just you name it, we outsold them.
Right. And the low-hanging fruit here seems to be, well, did you use any of that mind reading stuff in that first sales job?
Absolutely. Right. Cause in a way, you have to read the mind of your customer or client, right?
Right.
You have to see the experience through their mind so that it guides your presentation to give them exactly what they need to want what it is that you're buying or selling.
Right.
So if you make the magic demonstration look too much like skillful demonstrations or the result of just magic, they're going to think, well, there's no way I could do that, and mm-hmm. they're not going to buy it. So in order to sell magic, you have to look like an idiot that is just so incompetent, but wow, it's still working. So maybe my 7-year-old could do this.
Right. That must have been such a great learning experience and application experience to take something that you were so passionate about and interested in and see dollar bills come out of it. I guess you saw a little bit of that with the restaurant, but this is, I mean, direct sales, right? It's a little bit different than mm-hmm. than saving the restaurant $70.
Right. But but even before the restaurant, I was doing street performing.
Right.
So wow. I would go out. I grew up near Asheville, North Carolina. So that was kind of the closest, biggest city that I could get to. So I would just go to downtown Asheville and juggle fire on the sidewalk and then pass the hat. Right. Wow. So
how old were you at that point? Like high school?
Like 15, 16.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So that is direct sales.
For sure.
Being able to attract an audience, entertain them, keep them from walking away because they didn't buy a ticket. They have zero emotional investment in seeing it out to the end. So you have to create it yourself and then make them understand that, you know what, you've just received value. Why don't you exchange some in the form of foldable dollar bills?
Right.
Right. And that experience from when I was 15, I'm now 36. That plays out in trade shows. So now big companies book me to be their street performer, to stop people in the aisles, communicate their value, and then turn the crowd into pre-qualified clients.
Right. Could you give a few tips to the outsiders who have no experience with magic or any of this type of stuff in terms of if I'm a store vendor, let's say, you know, I have a downtown shop or even an online shop, like two or three tips that we could apply to, like you just said, get attention, provide value, and convince the viewer or the visitor that they have gotten some value?
The number one thing sounds harsh because it is, but it is the most valuable thing you could wrap your head around. And that is, nobody cares about you.
Right.
Nobody cares about your widget. Nobody cares about what you're selling. Nobody. The only thing they care about is feeling better or not feeling bad anymore.
Right, the pain or pleasure points.
Exactly. So you have to be relentlessly focused on your client, on your customer, and how you could make their life better.
Right.
Not on, I created this thing and therefore I think it's neat. Or I love doing this and therefore you should care. Nope. Right. I sure don't. The only thing that matters is, how do you make me more money? How do you make my life better? What do I get out of knowing you?
Right.
Right. So when you build your website, you have to be relentlessly focused on communicating how I make your life better.
Right.
And what's the number one way you do that? Well, then focus on that and make that the only option that your visitor can take, is to find out more about that thing.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, you see so many websites now focused around the I, you know, I'm this, I do that, I do this, here's my product. That's a great point.
Exactly. And everybody thinks, oh yeah, he's not talking to me. No, I'm talking to you, man. Like, it's everybody's like, oh, my website's great. And they're like, probably not.
I'm thinking about it now. I think I'm going to have to go rewrite my own website too.
But even this, your About Me page, right? Mm-hmm. That is not an opportunity to talk about you. Mm-hmm. It's an opportunity to explain why your experience will make their life better.
Right.
Every single sentence has to communicate, and this is why you should value my time.
Right.
Right?
For sure.
And here's what you get out of that experience. And here's why that applies to your situation. Right? So when you're writing your About Me or the About the Project or About the Store, your About Me page is the number one page that clients go to. And if you don't frame every single sentence in helping that person understand why it benefits them, you've just wasted the most valuable page on your website.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. And so, Jonathan, I'm curious to hear what ends up happening with this experience at the Magic Store, and then what the next step is after that.
So I was there for about a year and a half, a year and three quarters, and it was phenomenal. I got an offer from a full-time performer to be his tour manager. And I was like, yep, I'm in. You're not going to be able to pay me a lot. However, you will pay me in answering every single question about your business model so that I can replicate your recipe for success.
Right.
So
almost like a half boss, half mentor type thing.
Exactly. It was, he put me to work, man. But it was super worth it to not get paid a lot, but I got paid in experience, exposure, and mostly exactly in a tried and true, here's how his process works. I do those things. I get his results. Okay, neat. And I'd already learned that lesson from learning how to juggle fire from my first mentor, who was a retired street performer, right? So he showed me the ropes. I was super shy, but he was like, look, use my script. Here's my shtick. Here's my 20-minute show. Use my script. You'll get my laughs. And then I used his script, and I got his laughs, and I started getting his tips, right?
Right.
So I started seeing, wow, the value of tried and true process. So then once you have that, then you could try something different. You could improv, you could be in the moment, you could respond to a natural joke that came up. And if it works, great, it now stays in the show. But if it doesn't work out well, you know, you could go exactly back to the script and pick up right where you left off from, right? So you always have that home base. So I recognize the value of direct mentorship real early in life. So my strategy has been find somebody who's good at what I want to be doing and then make myself useful to them, learn everything they've got, and then go put it into practice for myself.
Right. And it's like what they say in business, like you don't have to rewrite the script, find a business model, or in your case, a mentor who's doing what you're doing or has done what you've done. And, you know, you don't have to come up with the new coolest app or whatever, find a great business model or within a great industry and learn from them.
Exactly.
Could you explain to someone who may not be so well-versed, such as myself, in like these types of performers, what exactly was this guy doing on the road? Like what types of performances was he doing? And do you have any kind of cool behind the scenes stories?
Yeah, he's a bizarre magician, which is his niche. And he was working the college market at the time. So vaudeville didn't go away in the early 1900s. It just shifted to colleges, right? So colleges have entertainment budgets to book performers to come entertain their college kids. And I mean, Steve Martin came up doing college shows. Right. So this guy's been doing college shows for a long time. So we spent a year and a half touring the country doing a bizarre magic show. So he would break bricks over his head, put a metal skewer through his tongue and then cut it off. You know, just really dumb stuff, but it's a lot of fun. So I was his tour manager, and I would open for him doing a mind reading bit. So that was a lot of fun. So we toured for a year and a half, and he was launching a web show at the time. So I researched a lot of that and was a script writer for the first something like 80 episodes of it, and just all sorts of cool stuff. So,
And when you say touring, do you mean like you and him in a car or
wow. we flew, get a rental car, drive 2 or 3 hours to get to the gig, do the show at night, and then sometimes drive back through the night to catch a early flight out to do the next thing. So we were on the road for about 180 days out of the year.
Wow.
Just either doing a show or getting to one.
Right. And was the plan the whole time, I'm going to learn from this guy and then I'm going to go out on my own? And is that the next step?
Exactly. So year and a half, I got it down pat. Okay, cool. And then I start doing college shows, doing my comedy mind reading show, do college stuff. I got the opportunity to do 2 weeks of shows in South Korea for the U.S. troops stationed over there. So I did a tour of the bases. So that was a lot of fun. Just did a lot of college shows. And afterwards, signing autographs, and college kids kept saying, "Man, I can't even imagine doing what you do for a living." Right. And that is the pivot point for me, because they mean that in at least two ways, right? The first one is, how in the world do you read minds? I can't even imagine how that's possible. Like, I can't even imagine how you do what you do. That's incredible. The second part is, I can't even imagine doing something that is not the 9-to-5 grind of showing up at a cubicle, trading away my happiness for way too little money and zero job security. And there's your reality. Good luck enjoying that. But here I am, traveling the world, getting paid for it, having fun. And they're just like, this is so far outside my realm of what I could even imagine as being possible. This guy might as well be Martian.
Right.
Right. So I started talking to college kids, going, well, here's how I think about things. Here's how I made it happen. Here's what I do. And then start getting emails back saying, hey, thank you so much for talking to me. It made all the difference in the world. Here's what I'm doing now. And it's all because of our conversation. So I was like, ah, dang it. Now I have to teach. Right. Because Because everything that I do on stage, making it look like I could predict the future or influence people's choices, right? It's all predicated on that applied psychology. Then I realized all the stuff that I'm using on stage, I've used in my own personal life to have amazing relationships and amazing friendships and business. So I use these skills when I'm negotiating show contracts, when I'm negotiating with the producers of America's Got Talent, just all these things, right? So that's how I've gotten to work on multi-million dollar television projects as a consultant, is I leverage these applied psychology principles. So then I was like, all right, now I have to share this with the world. So now instead of just having the entertainment side of things, I now kind of take people behind the psychological curtain and explain exactly how it works and how to apply it, like I said earlier, in negotiation presentations and sales processes.
And can you go through a little bit of that evolution? Was it like a light switch where you just kind of went from full-time touring to, okay, now I'm going to focus more on the business side? Do you still do both at the same time?
Still do both at the same time. I don't like saying no to money, right? So it was one of those, I'm not going to stop this and start that. It's more of while I continue to do this, I will also add in that.
So,
So yeah.
yeah, that it's so interesting. I mean, so you're the 29th guest on the show, Jonathan, and I can't think of someone who's had even close to like such a an intriguing and out there kind of story and how they came to what they are today. It's
Right,
so interesting.
that I really want to talk to that because that's exactly my unique selling position, right? Because it would infuriate me to see business consultants and business speakers talk about, oh, I talk about the psychology of success and the psychology of this and that. And I'm like, can you stand in front of a room full of 5,000 people and make them believe that you could read minds and that that's possible? No, I know this better than you. I want your lunch, right? So they also all say, I'm an interactive speaker. You're like, no, you're not. You tell the audience to high five the person to their right and shake the hand of the person on their left. And there you go. You call that interactive. Nope. I actually involve my audience in the experience. Volunteers come up on stage. I make them the star of the show. I help them predict the future, read minds, just do impossible things, right? So it is a rock star show combined with phenomenal world-class psychology that you're not going to get anywhere else because magicians have had tens of thousands of years head start on classical psychology, which might be 100 years old, right? It's like, I don't care where you grew up, there's an empty cage and poof, now there's a tiger in it. That's amazing, right? So all the psychology that business consultants and speakers are citing are clinical psychology research projects that were done on college freshmen that they're having trouble replicating. Like, I don't know about you, but if gravity stopped working, that would be terrifying. So these quote unquote psychological universal principles that they're talking about, they can't replicate. That's like saying gravity can't be replicated. So it's falling apart, right? So that's why I was like, all right, I have to get in on this. I have to share the gospel of what I can do, and it will be phenomenal.
So I have two like burning questions after. That's a great pitch. I mean, I'm sold on it.
Book me yesterday.
Two questions. Number one, what are a few things that us business people, I'll say us because I have a BCom degree, so I definitely fall into that, more businessy type category. What are two or three things that we're missing or that we get wrong consistently? And then kind of a semi-connected question is, if we are really looking to learn this type of psychology and how it relates to business, should we just throw all the business books out and go right to learning like the magician type stuff that like you said, has been around for hundreds of years?
Kind of. Really? Wait. So, what was the first question? Because I'm easily distracted, though.
Yeah, no, I'm usually better at splitting them up, but I didn't want to forget either one. What
Yeah.
are like two or three things that us business people either get wrong or we're constantly, you're constantly saying, oh, they're wrong, or they're missing this part or something like that.
Oh, right. The number one thing is thinking you know what your customer is thinking before you actually do. Right. So, and especially in the sales process, people jump into here's who we are, here's what we do, here are our features, here's what our software does. Look at all these doodads that it has. Isn't that neat? And none of that speaks to, well, here's what I need as a customer. Here are the benefits I need. Right? So people jump into the sales pitch way too early instead of having a conversation to understand what your potential client is thinking. Right? What do they want? What are their hopes and dreams? What are their problems? What are the effects of those problems? Right? What happens because this problem is there? They're not solving the problem. They're avoiding the effect of that problem existing in their life or business. So if you don't understand what those things are, you can't understand how to present your product or service as the solution of avoiding those effects of those issues. Right? So the second one is, should we just all take up being magicians? Kind of. Think of it like this. A painter, you've got phenomenal technical skills, but maybe you don't have vision or whatever, right? But think of it like this. Say you want to be a forger and you have to replicate that Picasso or Degas perfectly. It has to be flawless in order to sell it, right? So are you just going to casually glance at the original work of art? Are you just going to look at it once and think, oh, I've got it? Or are you going to study it? Are you really going to sit with it and examine every single detail? And then work on your skills, your craftsmanship of being able to replicate exactly that thing that you want to create. Right? So, in a way, as a communicator and as a salesperson, you have to be phenomenally skilled at lying. I am not saying that you should lie. But what I am saying is for a lie to be believable, everything has to be perfect. Your tone of voice, your word choice, your physiology, your timing, the details, everything has to be perfect. Only by figuring out how to be an effective liar can you even start to understand how important the details are to telling the truth.
Interesting.
So you have to understand every single nuance and detail of what goes into communication if you want to communicate your value, your service, your trustworthiness, and then follow through with those skills to meet those expectations that you very consciously communicated. Right? So many people think they're phenomenal communicators because they know how to talk. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. It's only when you could be a believable liar could you competently communicate the truth.
Interesting. Could you give some, like, are there exercises or things that we could practice to explore that idea that you just explained?
Like, for example, super simple is a beginning magic trick is you're holding a coin in your right hand, you take it with your left hand, and you squeeze your fingers and open your hand, and the coin's gone. Right? But how did that work? Well, the coin never left your right hand. Simple. It's simple, but when you first start, you're going to fumble. You're going to be super nervous that somebody's going to look at your right hand. So it's going to be held awkwardly, which makes the other person go, what's going on with your right hand? Right? Yeah. So it's your guilt and your mind of what you're worrying about that creates the situation for it to follow through and actually happen.
Right.
Right? So whatever you're worried about happening, whatever you're focused on happening, you create the behavior that makes it happen.
Gotcha.
Right? So you have to be so skilled and competent so that you could be confident that it will work without a hitch, which frees you up to focus on relating with your audience member, your client, your customer, and you don't even have to think about the physical skills, which will then help you relax, which helps your customer relax and focus on the relationship building. But if you are worried about anything, if you're anxious about anything, if you doubt your skills of follow through, if you doubt that you're the best in the world at what you do, that's going to come through. Your spectator, your customer is going to be able to read your mind. Because we're social creatures. We're really good at it. It's just that not many people are consciously good at it.
Right. It kind of sounds like perfecting your form, but really, really magnified. And the reason why I say that is, for example, I had a basketball game last night. And you can tell when your shot, for example, is not, you know, you're missing a lot of shots one night, you tend to be more in your head, you're thinking too much, your elbow's not in, you know, things like that. But in this case, it's kind of magnified, I say, because, you know, especially the way you explained it, it's showing on your face and maybe your hands shaking. So it's like, you got to be perfect. But if you're not perfect, it's not like, oh, the ball is not going to go in the rim and you'll get another chance. This is kind of like all or nothing. So it better be damn perfect.
Exactly. Right. So here are the kind of levels I like to think about it as. Imagine you're a theater performer, you're an actor, and you're working off a script. You're fresh in the moment. You're responding to your fellow actors, but you've got a pretty good idea of what's going to happen because, well, you're all working off the same script.
Mm-hmm.
Now, an extra level of difficulty, you're now a comedian. Now you're interacting with the audience, even if you're still just using your script, you're still trying to elicit an effect from the audience and get them to laugh.
Right.
Right. So that's more difficult to me, right? Now, even more difficult, you're an improv comedian. So now you're taking suggestions from the audience, synthesizing it in real time, and creating a unique experience in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's super difficult. Now, hard mode. You're a magician. You're a mentalist. You're doing secret, tricky things in front of a room full of 5,000 people that are watching you. Right. Now, invite multiple strangers on stage with you. Be able to communicate your expectations of what they need to do. Give them clear directions that they could understand while being nervous standing in front of a room full of 5,000 people. Not allow them to see the secret stuff that you're doing. Manage their bizarro behavior that you may not be able to predict.
Mm-hmm.
Using suggestions that they're just coming up with that they've never dreamt of before, that they're just coming up with it in the moment. And still bringing that experience to a fantastic conclusion that gets people to leap to their feet and applaud.
Right.
Talk about having to manage details.
Yeah. And that just puts things in perspective, especially when, you know, now you go on a podcast and it's like taking a walk, you know, while some people might be nervous about doing, you know, some quote unquote small things like that. And I'm sure it gives you so much more confidence to do anything else really, or try other things and stuff like that. That's incredible.
It's like,
Jonathan, oh yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's like, if you're going to do anything, why not take it serious? Mm-hmm. Why not cultivate your skills to be world class and be able to be the best, right? Like, really
Right.
do it. Don't just go, I'm fine doing this kind of worthless approach. It's just getting by, and I'm okay with that. It's like, nope, man, be world-class. Be able to handle world-class problems. Be able to handle world-class situations. And suddenly, there will be very few of you who could do what needs done.
Right. And that's a great segue into what I was going to ask next, which is, I mean, that's a great point, but could you maybe give another two or three kind of general pieces of advice to entrepreneurs or people who are working the 9-to-5, but they know they want to do something more, or they're students and about to leave school and, you know, they love your story and your approach and want to, you know, adapt that to their life?
Yeah. Be valuable. Make yourself valuable to somebody that preferably has lots of resources.
Right.
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 There's this belief that a lot of people have that keep them locked out of doing what they want to do, which is I need to be a professional left-handed goat wrangler. Right? Like,
right.
I'm going to go be a professional this thing when there's zero market for it. Now, I know a lot of people are going to be like, well, I would create the market. I would create the demand, right? It's like, nope. Figure out what the market values. Figure out the best way that you could create that value for the market in the way that you would enjoy the most. And then you're going to enjoy making the market happy.
Right.
So it just goes right back to nobody cares about what you want to do. They care about what they want. So if you serve the market passionately, obsessively, focus on what the market wants, then give the market what it wants to the best of your abilities, then you're going to get everything that you want, which will then give you the resources to do whatever you want, regardless of whether or not there's a market for it. Right.
Right. Right.
So focus on making yourself valuable to massive value, and suddenly your life gets a lot better.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. And Jonathan, I can't let you go without asking if you have, because of these amazing experiences, I feel like you'd have some pretty decent resources in terms of books you recommend people read or podcasts you listen to, maybe, you know, two or three resources you could recommend for us.
Absolutely, I do. The book I would recommend everybody on the planet reading is the book that I wrote called Think Like a Mind Reader. Right. So that's available on Amazon.com. Just search Think Like Mind Reader. But yeah, for me, the book that influenced me the most was Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. So every time I read it, I'm a different person. So I get different stuff out of it. So that's amazing. Richard Cialdini, I'm not sure how to say it, I only read it. Influence is a seminal work on influence in business and life. So that's great. If you like bite-sized podcasts, there's one called Curiosity Daily, which is smarter every day in like 6 minutes or so. So that's a cool project. That's just a fun one to listen to. And if you want to learn how to do all this stuff and how it applies to life and business, I just recently launched mindreaderuniversity.com. So I'm
cool.
I'm assembling these training programs that I do for companies like BP and State Farm and these kind of corporations. Normally it's a 2-day training workshop for up to 16 people. So that's kind of the training side of what I do. But, you know, it's valuable for everybody else too. So I'm slowly building these online courses that you'll be able to take to learn and improve your skills in whatever job it is that you're doing. So I would strongly suggest people check that out.
Great. And we'll have links to that in the podcast description. And Jonathan, where could people find you personally?
Ooh, the best place to find me personally is on Twitter, which would be the underscore Pritchard. So that's my personal Twitter, where I talk mainly about speaking and the psychology of this, that, and the other thing. So that's the best place to find me. I mean, I've got so many buckets. Like I've got an art site where you could view my artwork. I also do martial arts and teach kung fu. So I have a book on that and a online academy for kung fu. So it's just like I got a lot of irons and a lot of fires, and it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, Jonathan, really appreciate you coming on. Even just the little bit that I've got to learn today has been a ton of value, and we'll have to have you on to look into some of those other irons some other day. But thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate your time.
Hey, my pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
Hey everyone, Josh checking in just one more time. Wanted to say thanks a lot for listening to the episode. Hope you got a lot of value out of it. And I wanted to see if you're interested in joining my email list. The link will be in the description of whatever podcast platform you're listening to this episode on, whether it be iTunes or Google Play or whatever. And what I do is I send out 3 emails a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, usually in the morning. And they're pretty short, usually around 300-400 words. And what I'm doing is sharing some extra thoughts, insights, ideas, struggles, lessons I've learned, because I am running my own service business too, and I love to share my thoughts, opinions, and just want to add some more value right to your inbox every week. So if you're interested, take a look at the sign up link in the podcast description on whatever you're listening this to on, and I hope to see you there, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Take care.